Blog Talk Radio.
You have room on your team for this little space, bitch.
Football tonight. I'm your host, Todd the True Guru Farino, and of course, I will be joined shortly by Mr. R.C. Rizza, and we have another fantastic show planned for you tonight, and some good news across all platforms. First and foremost, I'm trying a new sound system here. I'm doing the HD Hi-Fi. Is it HD? No, that's actually high definition. Hi-Fi with Blog Talk Radio, so I hope I sound a little bit better than I've just sounded in the past, and hopefully I can figure all this stuff out, you know. Didn't get that right. Anyhow, we're going to be talking today about rookie wide receivers. We covered one rookie wide receiver because I jumped the gun last week and upset RC quite a bit. But this week, we're going to cover the remaining rookie wide receivers, along with, of course, the news is going on today. There was some news today. There's always news in the world of football. I mean, I always see a picture of Roger Goodell probably crying on the screen. That's what I see. And we're also going to talk some league talk. We still have a few open slots. Again, I haven't decided 100% whether or not I'm going to shorten up the leagues. I mean, just so much activity. And we have the three leagues right now, but we still have a few slots open. So if you'd like to get in, go ahead and email me at todd@fantasyfootballtonight.com. That's .com.net for you old school RC Rizza fans. Matter of fact, I'm going to bring in Mr. R.C. Rizza right now. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Todd?
I am just wasting time talking about fantasy leagues. It's your favorite. It's your favorite part of the show.
Oh, please continue.
By the way, how's
our auction? I haven't checked in on our auction. That should be almost over, right?
Well, it's over for me. So I haven't looked in on it. I've been waiting for the rookie draft to start. So it's been over for me. I took Dahani Jones with the remaining $500 I had.
Okay.
whatever.
How'd you end up doing? Was that your first auction?
Auction in a very long time. Yes. I haven't done auction drafts for several years now. I think I got schooled a little bit at the beginning. But I caught on and I got some of the players I wanted. It's a 16 team league, so you know it's no joke.
Yeah, no, but yeah, looking at you, I mean, you're like really strong in running back. So you got Devonta Freeman, you paid a lot for him, $3,300. Bishop Sankey for $2,000. That was a good deal.
You ignorant slut.
What's that?
I'm sorry, did I say something?
Was that Dan Aykroyd?
Yeah, I don't know if it sounded quite clear enough, but I wanted to say something to you because I didn't like you telling me I paid too much for Devonta Freeman. Because you know, what did I pay for Devonta Freeman?
You did pay a pretty penny for him, but
I'll tell you why really quickly. Because the reason I paid like $3,300 for him. Or in your world, $3.3 million. But the reason I paid so much for him is because that's where I got kind of schooled in this draft. I blinked and there were no running backs. There were running backs were getting thin, and my running back crew was thin at the time. I had the most money to spend at the time because I hadn't drafted him back. So I went ahead and I have a lot of confidence in him, and I had confidence in him last year. I'm going to have confidence in him this year. So I had to outbid like two people who were killing for him. So I wasn't the only expert willing to spend an obnoxious amount of money on them.
And the other thing about auctions, though, in relative terms, actually, I think you did pretty good with them, because I'm looking at, like, some of the other guys that went, like, for example, Mark Ingram went for $4,400. That sounds like too much for him. And then there was Jonathan Stewart went for about $3,600. I would say that Devontae Freeman is probably, the prospects for him are just as good. As you know, Jonathan Stewart, he had, you know, obviously was the first year last year that he stayed somewhat healthy and showed what he could do. But, $3 million for him is pretty risky. Frank Gore went for 38. So I would definitely want Devonta Freeman over Frank Gore. I don't know how much Frank Gore has left. You know, certainly that. So, yeah, auctions are strange because it's you got to really gauge them in relative terms. And like you're saying, it kind of goes by like what the scarcity is at any given point in time. So yeah, I think you did pretty good with that.
It looks like I paid, but just to let people know, I did pay $3,300 for him, so not too shabby.
Yeah, no. The one I don't get is why'd you nominate and win Reggie Wayne? No one else bid on him, so you got him for the league minimum. $300.
That's what you call a failed decoy. Because what I would do is, if I was seriously, this was part of my strategies. I would be bidding. I think I was trying to win Terrence Williams at the time, or Terrence Williams or Michael Crabtree at the time. And so I said, let me throw another wide receiver out there that has a big name. I mean, I mean, obviously he's not on a team right now. I think he'll sign with somebody before too long. I mean, I'm hoping his retirement's not official. At least according to his website, he hasn't retired officially. And so, and there are teams looking at him. It's like five teams are looking at him. So I said, I'm going to throw him out there and see if he'll get the attention of these guys bidding on my wide receivers and then leave my wide receivers open. I still got my wide receivers, but it really didn't work. So now I have Reggie Wayne.
Okay.
let me ask you this question. Let me turn around to you, and I'm gonna ask this question. Then we'll get into our wonderful rookie wide receiver segment. But I wanted to ask you about the Colts. You have the Colts, who have pretty much one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I mean, he's still developing, I believe. But before, got to remember, it took 9 years for Peyton Manning to win a World Series. A Super Bowl. So Andrew Luck has time. But he's already been amazing. So he's just gonna get better. But the team additions they made, I mean, obviously they let go of Reggie Wayne. They let go of Ahmad Bradshaw, who's, I think he has a one-game suspension anyways. By the way, that's another free agent that I pulled my awesome move on, where I threw his name out there as a $300 bid, and somebody sucked him up. So don't just laugh at me. Go find the guy who has Ahmad Bradshaw. But either way, really quickly, they went and they signed Frank Gore and Andre Johnson. Now, the average age of Andre Johnson and Frank Gore is about 66, okay? So what were they doing, especially when you have a Dante Moncrief, who's ready to certainly fill that role that Reggie Wayne filled on the opposite side of T.Y. Hilton? Why would you go out and sign a 34-year-old Andre Johnson and a 32-year-old Frank Gore, especially with Dan Boom Heron behind him, or a plethora, and check that word, R.C., of running backs, albeit aged running backs, available in free agency? Talk to me.
Well, I think the problem with the Colts is going to be similar to last year, which is that I don't think they really made the necessary improvements on the offensive line, which probably still remains below average. As far as like signing Andre Johnson, I personally would not have done that. I think he'll be I can't see him being that much of an improvement over Hakeem Nicks, actually, and they stuck with him all year. I have no idea why, but he was pretty useless last year. Andre Johnson, obviously a illustrious career, and but it definitely is drawing to a close. And for the Colts to expect much out of him is, and maybe they don't expect. Maybe he's just really the placeholder for their young guys like Dante Moncrief, and they drafted another pretty high potential receiver, Philip Dorsett. Dante Moncrief is the type, the big receiver that could play the Hakeem Nicks, Andre Johnson role, where Philip Dorsett is more of a T.Y. Hilton. They still have those, probably among the best tight end tandems in the league with Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener. And, of course, Andrew Luck, you know, like you're saying, if he's not the best quarterback in the league, he's pretty damn close, and he might get there this year. But a running game should be an improvement. You know, if nothing else, you're going to get a, you know, gritty, determined performance from Frank Gore, something that wasn't happening with Trent Richardson, obviously. Frank Gore is going to give you all he has, and, you know, that's important. They've got Dan Heron behind him. So, I mean, offensively, I would say that this team is better. Andre Johnson's a little bit of a wild card. I think, you know, he should have something left in the tank, and although he's not going to be that much more of an improvement over Nicks, he could actually be a significant improvement, depending on, I would say early in the season, Andre Johnson will be important, and then he's going to fade and probably give way to Dante Moncrief. But overall, I think, you know, this is a team that definitely improved slightly. Would have liked to see more on the offensive line. Defense might still be a problem, but, you know, for, you know, you have Andrew Luck in, I know, one dynasty league, and I wish I had him. So, you know, that's the one sure thing on this whole team.
Oh, definitely. So, and now another, and I agree with you. I mean, and we'll talk about Dorsett, obviously, a little later in the show. He'll be coming up in the rookie wide receivers. And I do think that you're absolutely right about the Colts. They still have the problem of the offensive line. They didn't do really hardly anything to really upgrade that. And if you saw last year, there was a lot of times where, you know, Andrew Luck was running for his life. And that's where Ahmad Bradshaw came in, because he's an excellent blocking running back. And guys like Trent Richardson aren't. He's average. And Boom Heron had his issues at that position as well. So you're probably going to see more double tight end sets, you know, with the Colts. And, you know, and there comes Kobe Fleener into town, you know, and that group of guys. But I do agree with you. The receiver position is going to be fun to watch, and so is the running back at this particular team. Now, this team has made a history of picking up guys, you know, either late in free agency or during the season to fill in those roles. So we'll see what they do. Like I said, there is a bunch of running backs still available. I mean, I think they're fine at wide receiver. I don't see them doing anything else at wide receiver. But if you look at some of the running backs that are still available, you know, and this is a question that's been posed to me, is, you know, and it happened today, because I've been telling people, you know, people have been asking, for example, about Pierre Thomas. I mean, he was very good with the Saints. Obviously, he has a little bit of an injury history, but otherwise, very good, just all around good back, you know, catches balls out of the backfield great, did a wonderful job for the Saints. They were wondering why he wasn't signed, and, you know, and were the Cowboys interested in him? Was, you know, some of my Cowboy buddies were talking about, and I said, no, he's not quite what they're looking for. But today, after Arian Foster went down with a groin injury and is now going to have surgery on that groin, I want the update that you've heard on that. But what do you think about Pierre Thomas, you know, moving into that role along with the cast and crew of that running back game for Houston Texans?
You can't count out Alfred Blue. I think he's shown that he can definitely fill in capably when given the chance. So I think it very significantly moves up Alfred Blue. I didn't realize that the Texans signed Pierre Thomas.
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay.
I believe that's what came across in the wire to me.
Okay. I didn't hear that. If that's the case, I think with Pierre Thomas,
They were talking, but they're so far unable to agree on a contract. So okay. They're trying to sign him.
So if that doesn't happen, then they've got Alfred Blue and Chris Polk and also Jonathan Grimes. And there'll probably be some kind of committee situation where Blue, I think, would be the most important guy. Pierre Thomas, if they do sign him, I think he's more of a complementary player, where he good third down guy. So if they do sign him, I think, you know, he'll definitely be a third down guy, important, you know, on the passing downs, with Alfred Blue probably being the guy on the early downs. But yeah, what I heard about Foster, I mean, the same thing as you have. It's pretty serious. They expect him to be out for half the season.
Wow, then that's no surprise. That groin has been a struggle for him his entire career. And this has quite a fantasy impact. I mean, the Houston Texans have been really losing their fantasy power over the last several years. I mean, obviously, Matt Schaub leaving that team, Andre Johnson's decline. And then, of course, you still had Arian Foster back there doing his gig. And now that's gone. So now you're basically down to a wide receiver. And that's it on that team. They don't even have really, stellar tight ends anymore. What are we talking about? Are the Texans now teams where you kind of just stay away from, fantasy-wise?
Yeah.
Outside of Hopkins. Or do you even – let me rephrase that question. Do you take Hopkins serious now with the fact that, I mean, he basically has he has – school man Nate Washington still on that team. And I know they signed Cecil Shorts, but their running back, their quarterback is now going to be Hoyer. So what do we do here? What is the official story on Houston? Is it an offense that you think is just going to struggle all year and you stay away from?
Well, I think there's some bright spots. Forget about Nate Washington. He'll be as irrelevant as he was in Tennessee. They do have Cecil Shorts, and he's proven to be a productive player. He's definitely going to be like the guy in the middle of the field, slot guy. Brian Hoyer, he's a capable but boring quarterback, but similar to, I think, Ryan Fitzpatrick. They do have Ryan Mallett behind him, but he's pretty much an unknown quantity. And then behind him, actually, someone I like, Tom Savage, we might actually see him at some point. And to the extent where Tom Savage was definitely a work in progress when he was drafted last year and everyone knew it. But I think he got into like one game and then got hurt like after a quarter. But he actually looked pretty good. And I have tempered, fairly good expectations for him. I think he might... He might end up being the starter there, and he's definitely going to have to take some lumps, but he might be their best hope at quarterback right now. I really like Jaylene Strong, the rookie that they drafted this year. He did miss time in the OTAs with some injury issues, and so he got a little bit of a late start, but this guy to me looks similar to like Dez Bryant. Just a powerful receiver who pulls down contested balls. Good speed for his size. I think he's about 6'2", pretty bulky. About 220, about 4.4 speed. So I think he's going to be the guy that takes over that number two spot opposite of Hopkins, and that makes a pretty exciting top two receivers there. And you throw in Shorts, that's definitely an improvement over last year. So, I mean, to the extent where Savage turns out to be a good quarterback and ascends past Hoyer, the running game is going to be definitely that gets cut down many notches without Foster. But Alfred Blue's not a bad guy and definitely the guy to target fantasy. There's also talk about Chris Polk. So that's a situation to keep an eye on. Chris Polk, to me, is more like more of like a early down thumper kind of guy. So we'll see how that turns out. But between Blue and Polk, there's going to be someone productive there. And keep an eye on Jaylene Strong. I think he's going to be a player that maybe it might take a couple of weeks, but a guy that should be productive at some point.
Let me tell you about Jaylene. I got a lot of opportunity to see him out there at Arizona State. I mean, obviously, I live right down the road, as I say, from Arizona State, out in the desert. A 5-hour drive for us is down the road. And for you guys, that's a commute, right? RC in Long Island, 5 hours is a commute? No? No?
Yeah, I usually don't make it out there.
So
it's really out of my way from everything.
Oh, it is? Well, I mean, yeah, maybe you gotta come out here and see the desert. You know what? I think you'll get shell shocked by how much open space there is out here. Because I swear to God, when I was in, you know, New York City, and you saw me in New York City, I mean, I felt like I was just squished. I felt so claustrophobic in that city. Just trying to walk, it was tough. But we got to go back out there and see you again. This time, maybe we won't get sick. That's the story for another day. But on Strong, he is very physical wide receiver. He reminds me of I'm going to say you might argue with me. He kind of reminds me of a little bit of an Aquan Bolden, a little bit less of a Dez Bryant, because Dez Bryant's, you know, just got a different skill level. But he reminds me of a Bolden where he is very physical, very physical, and will go after the balls, you know, harder than most wide receivers will go after them. And you're right. He's going to pull him down. He's going to grab him. He's going to go down. He's going to make that, you know, catch in the middle and take the hard hit. That's the kind of guy that he's going to be. And he's definitely going to be the outside guy. I do not see Cecil Shorts finishing that role off as the outside wide receiver. As a matter of fact, that's completely inappropriate role for him. He is a great receiver, and I believe that's where he'll be. And you'll see Strong out there on the outside. I agree with you that there's not going to be any competition from Nate Washington. And in fact, was Nate Washington on Tennessee last year? No, he was on Tennessee last year. That's right. He caught like one or two touchdowns throughout the whole season. Nate is a fine guy, but they drafted Strong for that role. My concern is, and we'll wrap it up on this, and we'll go right in our wide receivers, is just that quarterback position. I mean, we got to see a little bit of Savage last year. He was a little rocky. Mallett obviously has his, you know, as a prospect and has abilities. But it looks like right now they brought in Hoyer, and he's a game manager, and they probably brought him in with the idea that Arian Foster was going to be the hardcore running back, and that's probably why they're going after Pierre Thomas, because now they know they don't have that slugger running back that they thought they had, and they're trying to go for the next best thing that's available, and that was Pierre Thomas. I have a feeling they will agree on a contract, and you will see Pierre Thomas, the starting running back for the Houston Texans. But time will tell on that one, RC. Time will tell.
I'm curious what – all right, so you said Anquan Boldin is the parallel you see with Jaylen Strong. And, you know, that's fine too. But to me, the reason why I said Dez Bryant is because Anquan Boldin never had any speed whatsoever. So he basically was above-average performer. Really, actually, more than that from his rookie year. I remember the first game he ever played, he just basically dominated by just brute force, right? What is the difference between Anquan Boldin and Dez Bryant to you? Because I see Dez Bryant as really some of the qualities of Anquan Boldin in terms of being able to catch contested balls. But the thing that sets him apart is the speed. And that's what I see more of in Jaylen Strong. So I don't see a guy that's as slow as Anquan Boldin. He did run about 4.44 at the combine. So I was just curious, why do you say Anquan Boldin?
Because Anquan Boldin was a fantastic route runner, and he would catch virtually anything that was ever thrown to him. I mean, I still remember that catch that he made from Kurt Warner where he got his devium septum split in the end zone and held on to the ball. That's not Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant, as a matter of fact, drops a lot of passes, runs a lot of terrible routes. I mean, in the end, he's amazing. I mean, he gets open, he burns players, and he has incredible speed. I think that I can't sit here and say what Jaylen Strong is going to look like when he goes on an NFL field against NFL players. I mean, obviously, he looks elitely fast against college players. But let's see him when the game speeds up on the NFL field, how he's going to look. But that's really the aspect I'm talking about, more along the lines where, like, you're right, he's going to snatch balls. He's going to catch most everything thrown to him. He's going to be a great possession receiver. I don't think he's going to be a tremendous deep threat. I think that's going to be, you know, even on that team, the bottom line is you got DeAndre Hopkins. He's one of the best at that. Last year, and he'll continue to progress that way. So I think that you're going to see him be more the possession receiver on that team and taking a lot of hard hits and a lot of hard earned first downs out of Jaylen Strong if he progresses as we expect him to.
Yeah, I think he's better than a possession receiver. And once again, I really think he's at least on paper and from, like you're saying, it's hard to translate what they were doing in college to the NFL, because every player is different and you just don't know how this is going to translate. But if it does, he really seems more of a Dez Bryant to me. And maybe to your point, maybe an improvement in terms of like the route running. You know, you're saying that Dez Bryant maybe freelances too much, and that's a problem. The other thing about Jaylen Strong is, for what it's worth, he also had the best vertical jump, you know, in the among all the draftees this year, 42 inches. So that's pretty impressive. But, and once again, I think he's at least straight line speed, he's as fast as Hopkins, because he runs about a 4.4. But that's not field speed, of course. You know, that's stopwatch, you know, running in a straight line. So, but all right, we'll see what happens.
Well, whoopsie, break it down.
Let's go ahead and move on now. Let's go ahead and move on. We're going to agree to disagree on who he best resembles. The third round, 70th pick in the NFL draft by the Houston Texans, who's probably going to do nothing this year because their team is going to get shredded every game. Kidding, he'll be a fine draft pick. He was one of my sleepers. But let's move on. Now, do you want to cover Amari Cooper as we did last week, or do you want to start with Kevin White? I'm going to let you decide.
Well, yeah, we talked about Amari Cooper a little bit. Yeah, it's pretty obvious. He's great. You know, there's no doubt about that. The thing I like about him, you know, once again, where his landing spot is very good. He's really smooth, great acceleration, great hands. You know, just one of those guys that looks like, you know, he's going to be an immediate difference maker. You know, one thing to keep in mind, he doesn't have great size. He, you know, he's not like one of those 6'4 guys. but what he does have is really just a rare ability to basically make cuts, run precise routes, and be in the right place at the right time. And once he catches the ball, he's very much a threat in the open field. So, yeah, Amari Cooper, and I think we mentioned he is going a little bit high in fantasy drafts, even redrafts. I mean, he's going as high as the fourth round, which is a little bit crazy for a rookie receiver. So there are very high expectations for him. Personally, and I think we both agree, I'm not touching him in the fourth round. you know, if he falls a little bit past that, you know, maybe he's worth it, but... Dynasty League's different issue. I mean, he's going really anywhere in the first three picks, along with Gurley and Gordon. So all three of those guys are occupying the first three picks in Dynasty drafts.
You know, I think I said this last week. I'm pretty sure. Hopefully I won't step on my own feet here. But what I like about Cooper is the fact that, you know, he's teaming up with the young quarterback in David Carr. That's outstanding. And they're going to have time, obviously, together. And they're going to make history of it, similar to Peyton, Reggie Wayne, and that kind of a duo. But what I like is you have a team that's still growing in the Oakland Raiders, all around that team, and both offensively and defensively. And I think they're going to be in a lot of games where they're going to be a lot of garbage points. And just like last year, where, you know, all of a sudden the Raiders are down 21-0 or whatever, 28-3, and, you know, and Derek Carr is chucking the ball up Jones for a 75-yard touchdown. I mean, that's what I kind of see out of Amari Cooper is going to be a lot of high reception games, high number of reception games, and a lot of yards, you know, 100-plus yard games you're going to see out of him, because it's, you know, it's him and Crabtree, you know, and Crabtree's, we'll see how he performs. I think he'll be better too. I'm actually riding a little bit on him, as you heard me earlier in the show. I drafted him in the auction draft because I think these guys are what David Carr needs in order to be successful. So I like what I see there. Would I touch him in the fourth round? Absolutely, I would. I'm not saying I would take him, but I'm saying I wouldn't be afraid to take him in the fourth round. Is that clear, RC?
Yeah, I guess. You know, for Todd speak, that's pretty clear. Crabtree is actually going all the way in the 14th round. So if you like the Oakland passing game, I mean, that's a guy that you probably want to hold out for. I was never a big Crabtree fan. I think he was held back a bit by the Niners offense. So it'll be interesting to see what he does in a new location. But 14th round for Crabtree seems pretty reasonable.
Oh yeah. Listen, I'm not expecting a whole lot out of Crabtree, but I'll tell you this: when you get him in the 14th round, what are you trying to expect out of a Crabtree? Think about it. I mean, this is a guy who had great skill and who showed great skill now and then in San Francisco, but he was playing in a different offense in San Francisco. He was playing in an offense that wasn't really conducive to his skills. He had a quarterback that wasn't, you know, I mean, listen, Colin Kaepernick had one really good year, and he did that mostly on his feet. He had a quarterback who would run around, the receivers would run around, and maybe he would chuck the ball down the field and one of them catch it. This is a different, and plus he also played in a division where the defense is brutal. I mean, he had to face Richard, what's his face? What's that crazy wide receiver or cornerback's last name? Why am I blanking on him? The loudmouth in Seattle. Sherman, thank you. Richard Sherman. He had to face off against him twice with Sherman. So they had their issues, but he doesn't have that. He goes to the AFC West, where he has, and I mean, they're not exactly easy defenses, but their defense is more to his skills, like the Broncos, like the Chargers, and those guys. Those teams aren't as defensively competitive as the, believe it or not, as the NFC West was. So I like where he's at now, and I think the change of division, meaning you know weaker defenses against him, and now he has what I believe is honestly a more skilled quarterback. Might not be as experienced, but a more skilled quarterback. I think you're going to see him grow. So I like both these guys. I like that whole Oakland offense. I think they're going to get blown out. I think they're going to have bad games. Don't get me wrong. There's going to be bad games. But when you look at their numbers at the end of the year for those three guys, for Carr, Crabtree, and Cooper, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Okay, fair enough. So, you know, then the other guy that's, you know, close to Cooper that looks like a guy that could make immediate impact. And if not, I mean, this is a guy that you definitely want to target in Dynasty Leagues. Is Kevin White, who is actually ran a slightly faster than Cooper at the combine, but you know, once again, it's straight line speed. But Cooper, in terms of his cutting ability, is actually probably slightly faster than White. But the impressive thing about Kevin White, though, is that he's 6'3", so he's a big receiver that runs, you know, that kind of a crazy speed. He actually ran a 4.27. So he ends up with the Bears, and they certainly need him, you know, obviously now without Brandon Marshall. So they're hoping that he can fit into that spot. But, Kevin White looks like he's going to be a pretty good player.
Yeah, I actually agree with you, with Kevin White. My only worry about Kevin White is this, Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler, you know, there was a lot of speculation. I thought he was going to get cut by the Bears. I thought they were going to move forward and go without Jay Cutler and, you know, maybe sign or draft somebody in the offseason. Maybe you can elaborate on that because I'm a little bit dumb. I know that he has a big contract and I know they owe him a lot of money. They don't owe him a lot of money. I mean, if he's the team, they do. But my recollection was that after his last season, you know, he was quite horrible. And, you know, now he's going in and, you know, he obviously still has talent all around him. Granted, the talent's aging a little bit. And they brought in a new wide receiver for him. Is this really going to make the difference? I mean, you know, I understand, hey, you know, we're all, you know, we all know about Alshon Jeffrey. We all know about – we're not going to know, but we're going to get to learn about Kevin White. We know about Matt Forte. He has Martellus, we know, which was a great tight end. I've loved him since the Cowboys. But is he going to be able to perform at all to any respectable level from a fantasy standpoint and make Alshon Jeffrey and Kevin White, you know, filthy? Or is he just going to, you know, make Alshon Jeffrey filthy every third game?
Well, I mean, you know, for all his troubles, first of all, you're saying – you know, the Bears and Cutler are stuck with each other. And when you look at what's behind Cutler, it's Jimmy Clausen and then some other guys that you've never heard of and maybe never will. So hopefully never will if you're a Bears fan. But when you look at, like, what he did last year, it really wasn't that bad. You know, he had four 300-yard games. He ended up with his highest yardage total since 2008. 28 touchdowns. That was his highest career total. So he didn't have a bad season. The thing with Jay Cutler, and it's always been, he's like Jeff George Light, you know, not the head case that Jeff George was, but in terms of like physical ability, where it's kind of frustrating because he doesn't really have the head to go along with it. Jeff George was like probably the worst in history for that combination. But Jay Cutler is similar in terms of great physical ability, but sometimes just doesn't have the football intelligence to make it translate onto the field. So I think you're going to pretty much get a similar – one wild card is that they did change the offensive coordinator, so we're not exactly sure, you know, what's going to happen in that regard. But I would say that, you know, if you're talking about from a fantasy perspective and drafting him as a bargain number one quarterback, he's probably worth doing that, you know, because we can check out his ADP. I mean, where would you guess he's going?
I would guess, if I had to guess in a regular draft, that he was going probably around the 9th or 10th round.
Believe it or not, 14th. So
wow. I was giving him a little more street cred, wasn't I?
So, yeah, he's going after Eli.
After Crabtree.
You know what's weird about Eli Manning is like way up there this year compared to where he was last year. He's in the 8th round, so that's probably not such a great deal. Jameis Winston, the rookie, is actually going 4 rounds above Cutler. Colin Kaepernick is going in the 11th. Marcus Mariota, the other rookie, is going in the 11th. Derek Carr is going in the 12th round. He would be, my preferred choice in the late rounds. Joe Flacco, 13th. You know, that's a good deal for him. And Jay Cutler is probably the best deal out of all of them. He's going in the 14th round, right above Andy Dalton. And then after that, there's no one left. So if you're going to wait a long time for a quarterback, you probably want to try to target Derek Carr, Joe Flacco, or Jay Cutler. Of the three, probably Derek Carr might be the safer one, believe it or not. But yeah, that's where he's going.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, and there's a lot of reason to be worried about, you know, Jay Cutler. And here, and we got to move on from this. But I love quarterbacks, and I think quarterbacks make or break your team. And you know, I made the argument years ago about how important wide receivers were years ago, and that's now taken off. But I think, you know, quarterbacks are so valuable, and we'll get more into them in the next show or two. But from the case in point of Jay Cutler is, he, you know, your whole goal to win your season is to make the playoffs. And, you know, when you go into matchups, you know, what's the first player you look at? You don't look at the guy who has the elite running back. Maybe you do. Maybe you, I'm afraid of Adrian Peterson or whatever. But, you know, or Jamal Charles. But what you do is you look at that quarterback. Yeah, it's the first thing you see. It's on the top of everyone's team list anyways. And you see that right there. And if you see it in the past, a Peyton Manning, a Tom Brady, an Andrew Luck, you know, one of these, a Drew Brees, you know, one of the elite quarterbacks, especially the Peyton Mannings or the Drew Breeses, you would say, crap, I got to beat this guy. When you look at a guy who has Jay Cutler on it, you don't worry about that. And the reason is because Jay Cutler is more than capable of putting up an awful game. And in fact, last season he had 5 games where he threw for under 200 yards. He had several games where he threw for multiple interceptions. And I'm talking about 2 or more, and I think maybe like 6 games. One game, of course, he had 3 in. That's a killer. I mean, 2 interceptions in most scoring systems takes away an entire touchdown. So, you know, if you lost games, 4 or 5 games because of your quarterback, and I'm not saying that really has happened. In reality, just because he did bad doesn't mean you're going to lose your game. But if you did, if he cost you enough games to where you didn't make the playoffs, that's the problem that I have with Jay Cutler. You want consistency, and I've always sat here and I preach to our listeners, consistency is key. And, you know, and that's why you go out and you draft a good quarterback because, like, hey, I'm, you know, like in our league, let me ask you a question. Who's your starting quarterback in the league we did the auction in your league?
Stafford.
And who's your backup?
Jay Cutler.
Exactly. Okay. Thank God you got Stafford. Now, I have Derek Carr, and I'm backed up by – I know I got Josh McNown, I believe, was my other guy I got in that one, and I think I have a third quarterback. No, I got McCown, the new Cleveland quarterback. But, I mean, I don't feel comfortable at quarterback in this league. I mean, I'm very excited for Derek Carr, and I hope that he can perform. But I know when people look at this team, they're going to see Derek Carr in my starting lineup, and they're going to say right away, this is a team I can beat. This is one I can go after. So, you know, now I look at yours, I see you have Stafford in there, and I say, that's a team I know I can beat. I'm not trying to hate on Stafford. I apologize. You know me and him have some bad blood, okay? All right, let's move on. Let's move on to – I want to get into the next wide receiver that you want to talk about, and that is, the exciting Devontae Parker of the Dolphins.
Yeah, he's kind of similar to Kevin White, you know, big receiver, pretty fast, not as fast as White. Good hands, you know, can make definitely stretch the field for a big guy. And the Dolphins are really excited. He's right now sidelined with an injury, but they're really penciling him in for a feature role in their offense, you know, you know, that could mean pretty significant thing. I mean, the guy ahead of him is, they've got Greg Jennings that they signed. Jarvis Landry from last year is considered to be probably their top guy, but he's more of a slot guy. Devontae Parker is definitely an outside receiver that they need. Kenny Stills is more of a little bit of a one-dimensional player. So Devontae Parker should develop into probably the most complete receiver that they have on this team. He looks to be that good, but you know, right now, just be cautious and see what's going on. He had foot surgery, and when you're a rookie and you miss time, it's always pretty risky. Although it didn't matter for Odell Beckham last year, but I think that is definitely the exception. So that's the one thing to be careful about with Parker. The fourth guy, if there's a sure thing aside from Cooper in terms of like playing time, it's probably Breshad Perriman on the Ravens. And not only is he a talented receiver, another guy that, good size and very fast. He actually ran a 4.26 for a pre-draft. But the Ravens really need him to step up, you know, especially missing Torrey Smith. Breshad Perriman really, right now, looks to be their best receiver as a rookie, which is a little bit scary. But who else do the Ravens even have?
They have Marlon Brown, who I believe is I think he's an undrafted free agent that they got. They also have Aitken on that team, who's been around, but nothing much there. Who else they have? They obviously have Steve Smith. They have Steve Smith Sr., as we call him now.
Right, but
who had it? Really blew up last year.
Right, but that's why. Yeah, and nothing against Steve Smith, but you know he's now 36 years old. And I'm not discounting him because he has just had such an incredible career. And like you said, when everyone was basically counting him out last year, he came through with an amazing season. But really behind Steve Smith, the only thing there is Breshad Perriman. So they're really counting on him. So for fantasy purposes, Perriman is a guy that, you know, you can definitely – slot in is probably your number three receiver and be fairly confident that he's going to do something. He's going in about the ninth round, which is probably a fair deal for a number three receiver. That's the same round that Devontae Parker is going, but if I had my choice between those two, I'd probably take Perriman.
I know I agree with you. I'm a little worried right now about the Ravens offense and where it's going to go. I mean, they have, I guess you could say, a decent running game between Forsett and Tefario again. They have, you know, a few other guys that are working in there, some young players. But, I mean, basically that's going to be the crew that's going to be running it. And then, of course, you know, on the passing end, you have the age, Steve Smith Sr. I do wonder, are these guys going to go after one of those free agent wide receivers like a Reggie Wayne that are still available out there? Or even an Ahmad Bradshaw to help that backfield a little bit. Granted, the backfield looks pretty set. I mean, Forsett gets the job done, and Lorenzo Ferrio is, you know, really is emerging as a running back that could put a stamp on his career this year and say, listen, I'm going to come into my third season and dominate. We'll find that out. But I do agree with you that Breshad Perriman, a number one draft pick guy, is a guy that can go out there and make a name for himself from the start of the season, especially with very little competition from fellow Central Florida, Kamar Aiken, Marlon Brown, and the crew of misfits that they have as at wide receiver for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, but by the way, also the Ravens drafted what was considered to be the best tight end in the draft, Max Williams. So, you know, Joe Flacco does have some hope, although Max Williams evidently didn't really seem like he caught on very quickly in the early going. So that's just something to keep in mind. But at the point where maybe the light goes on, you know, they do have another possible receiver with Max Williams. Just quickly, some other key rookie wide receivers, Doriel Green Beckham, he ended up with the Titans. He's a really an intriguing guy. He's another guy that's gotten off to a slow start, so I don't think you want to target him in fantasy drafts, but he's someone to keep in mind for the future, you know, like during the season if he starts actually making an impact. But really interesting player, 6'5". He's a, kind of like a Randy Moss type player. 6'5", runs a 4.4, just a huge target, you know, just a monster when he's playing well. But, you know, once again, so far for the NFL game, it's just not happening yet. But a guy to keep an eye on. Philip Dorsett, I think we mentioned him, ended up with the Colts. He's a, you know, like we were talking about, he's a, kind of similar to T.Y. Hilton, a little bit diminutive, 5'10", very quick, though, runs about a 4.2. So he'll be interesting to watch. Nelson Aguilar ends up with the Eagles. Fantasy players are very optimistic about him. He's actually going right after Kevin White, all the way in the 7th round. Is that a guy that you're that optimistic about, or is that just crazy?
Who is?
Nelson Aguilar, he's a rookie that was drafted by the Eagles.
No, he's actually getting, you know, he's getting a lot of hype in that Chip Kelly offense, especially obviously with, you know, basically the offense being renewed. You got him and you got Matthews there. You know, they had to throw the ball in that game. And, you know, and now with DeMarco Murray is more of a ball control guy. I mean, yeah, will he catch balls out of the backfield? Yeah. But it's going to be going to basically that tight end and that wide receiving crew. So, you know, he is definitely a guy that is not only getting a lot of fantasy intrigue, but is probably going to produce in the field. I mean, one of those, you know, we got to talk. We're going to have to spend a segment on the Philadelphia team. Maybe next show we can do that, because this is a team that, you know, with how crazy that offense is, can produce just mad points. I mean, like I said, you have Matthews. I hate trying to say his last name, but Nelson Aguilera. I'll hope that's right. I think they signed Miles Austin on that team. Of course, you have Ertz and Stelic still on that team. The only question is, can Stan Bradford stay upright for more than one game and actually stay on the field for more than one game? That's the big question that has to be answered. And that's why, personally, I would probably avoid this team. You know, again, I mean, if you can get – there's more stable, more consistent players you could probably jump on around these guys. But if Aguilera is there available to me, and like I said, I would say the 7th, 8th round, and I badly needed a wide receiver to fill a third wide receiver spot, he would definitely be a guy I would jump on, definitely. I mean, he reminds me of DeSean Jackson. That's like DeSean Jackson's replacement right there.
I don't think he's got the speed of DeSean Jackson. But you're right, though. He's kind of similar. The thing I'm not crazy about is that he's got a little bit of a slight frame. Now, that never really held back DeSean Jackson. But also, I'm not sure that the Eagles' offense really uses, like, the conventional deep threat. Because Nelson Agholor would definitely excel as a deep threat. One good thing about him is that USC, he did run in a pro-style offense, and he seems to be a fairly accomplished route runner. So, yeah, I mean, I can see the optimism in that regard, and he definitely seems to be looks like they're counting on him to be the number two receiver and to replace Macklin. But I just have some qualms about a rookie just stepping in and becoming instantly productive. I don't care what offense it is. And like you're saying, you brought up Bradford. I just don't have a lot of confidence in him. He just never excited you whenever he played. Did he have like one good season? I think, but the rest of them are, he just is like pretty much a picture of mediocrity. And it's going to be interesting to see how he even runs that Philly offense. I mean, have you heard any good things about him in the offseason?
No, I haven't heard much coming out. I mean, they're obviously very excited about him being there, and maybe with that offensive line, which is pretty good in Philadelphia, it's decent. They'll be able to keep him upright. It's just he's very fragile, and he has all the skill in the world. But it's just the question is can he stay healthy? And I think as you're going to see a lot of teams blitzing just the crud out of that team, because of their inexperience at wide receiver. You're going to have a rookie out there. You're going to have a second-year guy out there. Obviously, you got guys like Riley Cooper and Miles Austin now on that team who are a little bit more experienced but nonetheless ineffective for the most part. So I think teams will blitz the crap out of that team. And the only thing that will keep defenses honest would be the tight end crew they have there and DeMarco Murray. And that's another worry. Can he stay upright? Can he stay – or not upright. That's obviously silly because they get knocked down all the time. But can he stay healthy? He's had health problems, including a broken hand last year for Dallas. So we'll see how that all works out. Looks like we got to put a wrap on this one, RC. Is there any other people you want to quickly talk about?
Yeah, the only other guys on our list were Devin Smith, who ended up with the Jets. He's considered to be probably the best deep threat in the draft. You have to wonder if Geno Smith has the ability to throw deep, in terms of consistently finding somebody. I've heard some mixed things about Geno Smith, some positive. So he's not a guy to completely discard yet. So there might be hope for Devin Smith. Devin Funchess ended up with the Panthers, who seem to like this type of receiver. He's very similar to Kelvin Benjamin. Big, powerful, reliable hands kind of guy, but a little bit slow-footed. He's about 6'5". Ran about a 4.5 at pre-draft, which isn't terrible, but really not known for his nifty moves. And once again, pretty similar to Kelvin Benjamin. But it is good that Cam Newton does have another potential target to throw to. And the last guy, Tyler Lockett, who ends up in the Seahawks, and because of that, you probably want to just immediately dismiss him, and you might be right. But Tyler Lockett, pretty interesting. He, out of all the receivers that I looked at this year that came out, this guy is like just has like such amazing footwork and ability to change direction. So he could be an exciting player, someone to keep an eye on for fantasy drafts. I mean, he would be like your last round flyer. He's going in like the 17th round.
All right. We'll definitely watch out for that. We do got to put a wrap on it now, RC. Next week, we're going to get a little bit more into ADP talk, see where some players are going, give away some sleepers, and cover any more rookies that we may have missed. RC, it's been another great show, and
I hope you're enjoying it. We have to set aside at least 10 minutes to talk about Zach Ertz. All right.
To talk about who? Talk about who?
Zach Ertz, your favorite player from the Philadelphia Eagles, who we somehow forgot to mention.
Oh my God.
Hey. Want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
I'll see you later, RC.
All right, take it easy, man.